back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the No Direction Network Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alexander Gunas, the Everyman Gamer, and I'm joined by two of the galaxy's most intrepid Starfinders.
I'm James. I wrote Code Switch once a while ago. Yeah.
And I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
And tonight, folks, you're in for a treat. Coming to us live from his secret base sequestered somewhere in the diaspora, Starfinder Adventure Path developer and doctor of comics, Jason Tondoro. Welcome to No Direction, Jake.
Tondro, you...
You messed it up again.
It's true, he did. He practiced. Everybody listening, he practiced before the show, and he still got it wrong.
I was telling James and Vanessa that, like, for me, it's my personal Berenstain Bears, where, like, every single time I've tried to look up your... Yeah, that one. Every time I've tried to look it up, like, I know there's a correct way to spell it. I've gone to your Twitter. I've seen it on your Facebook profile.
Yes, but
every time I search for it, I find the wrong one, and it confuses me.
What if we just add a bunch of unnecessary syllables, and it's Jason Tanandro.
Now, to be fair, it was originally French. It was T-O-N-D-R-E-A-U.
Oh. So,
whoa.
And then it turned Tondro when the Tondro brothers came to Northern Canada from Europe. So, yeah.
And that, folks, is the kind of interesting facts you're going to get on No Direction Beyond. Ancestry of individual designers.
Because we go beyond the role-playing game. So that actually is a really good intro, though, because the first thing I wanted to talk about is your origin story. Because, like,
my origin story.
Yeah, Jake, you've never been on a No Direction show before, as far as I'm aware, right?
And why is that, by the way?
I don't know. You know what? I just want to point out that this is my first show as a master of ceremonies. So clearly,
nice.
I'm the best one because I'm the one who remembered to bring Jake on to the
show. Well, congratulations. Well, all good heroes, they have multiple origin stories. But the one that we'll tell tonight, I guess, is the one about how I came to Paizo, because that's kind of what you're most interested in. I was an English college English professor. I was teaching comics as well as medieval and Renaissance literature, like Chaucer, Shakespeare, Beowulf, Milton, the dead white guys, and some nuns. And I was teaching in the rural South, actually. And I was really struggling there. Like, I'm a super liberal dude, right? And there's like, and this is the rural South, and it was just not a very good fit for me. And some friends of mine, including some who live here in Seattle, had been after me for years to, like, just leave academia, like, just make your hobby your career. And things kind of came to a head. And so, a friend of mine living here sent me the job posting for Paizo's editor job. They were actually hiring two people at the time. They were hiring an editor job and an organized play position. Ooh. Well, I didn't even apply for the organized play developer job. That went to Mike Sayer, who of course is brilliant, right? But I had a lot of experience at editing because that's what I do as a college English professor, right? Like, I just create papers all day for 9 months a year. Well, anyway, and plus I had 40 RPG credits of my own by that point, right? As a writer or editor or publisher, art director.
Mainly in which systems?
Well, so I started off doing like D20 stuff in the OGL kind of boom era.
Sure.
I did Mutants and Masterminds. I did a lot of Icon stuff. My game Arthur Lives is an urban fantasy using the Fate system. So a lot of stuff kind of all scattered around. And I started as an editor, and I was an editor at Paizo for about a year and a half. And while that was going on, I found out that I was close friends with the people on the Starfinder team, and Chris Sims and Owen Stevens, I knew were both leaving. And so I went to Amanda Heyman, who at the time was the managing developer for Starfinder. And I said, listen, as soon as Sims leaves, you're getting my resume on your desk. So, like, just be ready. And so that allowed me to write the cover letter. I warned you this day would come. That was literally the sentence of my cover letter, right?
That's amazing.
But we interviewed a lot of people, and I got very lucky because they were hiring two people to replace both all one. If they'd only hired one, well, there's no way I was going to beat John Compton for a resume, right? Like, John Compton's been with Paizo for 8 years. He's been a developer on organized play for most of that time. he knows everything inside and out, and he's just super. So anyway, there was no way I was going to beat him. Thank God they were hiring two people. But I went through the developer test and interviews and everything, and I started edit. I started developing the back matter of the Threefold Conspiracy, and then the Devastation arc. And then my first opportunity to really do my own project is Fly Free or Die, of course.
Nice. And we want to hear all about Fly Free or Die because I can't speak for everybody on the show, but like for me, like I wasn't super interested in Fly Free or Die at first. I was like, oh, this is Skull and Shackles in Space, whatever. And then like I read a post from you on Twitter, and that post was like, it completely changed my opinion of it.
Well, so you know what you read is the consequence of the PaizoCon Q&A.
Oh?
It was PaizoCon at that time. And I did this big, long Ask Me Anything thread over the entire 4 days of the convention at PaizoCon. Mm-hmm. And people asked about Fly Free or Die. And you know, Skulls and Shackles in Space was one of the ideas that I almost did. Mm-hmm. But as we were talking about, and Rob, who of course developed Skull and Shackles in the first place, he was for that idea. Okay. But what I really wanted to do was not a pirate theme game, but rather something about working class heroes, right? Like characters that wouldn't even think of themselves as heroes. That's why the first volume is called We're No Heroes, right?
We're No Heroes, that's right.
But it's not an AP about people who are out here to save the galaxy. It's about people who just have to pay rent, right? Like I wanted to write an AP about people like me and you and most of our listeners, because most of our listeners are not like princes of the universe or whatever. Most of us are just trying to kind of get by, you know, one day at a time, in a really tough galaxy. And that's what I wanted to write about. And it's at one point I called it Eat the Rich in Space.
I loved it. You had me at that.
Yeah. And I think I called it late stage capitalism, the RPG. So, you know, so for example, right? So the player characters like have their ship. It's kind of Firefly, Han Solo in that sort of mode, right? Where you've got, you know, you're doing jobs. Maybe you're doing a little smuggling on the side, a little bounty hunting when you can't make the rent this month. But you're chased by your corporate masters that you used to work for, right? So we've got like kind of this Weyland Yutani corporation that we made up for this AP called Edge Corp. And Chris Sims helped me make up Edge Corp. In fact, he's the one that named it. And Edge Corp is the company, right? And then you're also running from this crime boss, this drow crime boss who's part of the Golden League. So we have kind of our Jabba the Hutt, you know, kind of guy who's sending out assassins and bounty hunters after you for the whole AP. And your corporate boss is the man, they're after you too. And, you know, you're just trying to like do your own thing, right? You're just trying to fly free. You just want to can y'all just leave me alone? And that's kind of your goal, is just to like be left alone, to do your own thing. So it's very different than our other APs. And I'm very gratified to hear that you like that idea, because it was a gamble. It's a risk. And when you pitch something that's risky like this, it's very gratifying to hear somebody say, yes, yeah, let's do that. Right. So thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. So like for me, I want to speak for Vanessa or James, but when I see Starfinder Adventure Paths, like, you know, it's hard not to contrast Starfinder to Pathfinder, since they have, they sound the same and they're made by the same company.
Sure.
For me, it's like when you compare the Starfinder stuff to the second edition stuff, the second edition adventure paths so far feel very like safe. Like this is what I would expect an adventure path for like a game to look like. But like all of the Starfinder ones from, and like this isn't even just like the adventure path line, the Starfinder scenarios themselves, like for Starfinder Society, they're all like, they know that they exist in a world in the far flung future where they know that memes exist and influencers exist and all these modern ideas. And like they use them to such amazing effect. Like I will never stop praising the live exploration extreme scenarios that where the entire premise is you're on a basically a live TV show, and now like for Fly Free or Die to come out, and it's like, oh, this is like this is a story that's relevant to like what's happening in our world now. Like this, I feel like this is going to resonate with people more than even like, I mean, going to a magic school, you know, and being a magic school student is cool. It's fun. It's a fantasy. I like it, but like, it doesn't like impact me. And like, you know, it's not something that I can inherently connect with as a person, the way that let's run from the corporate bosses and live our own lives does.
You know, there's different things going on. You've addressed a lot in that. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit before I carry on. Mm-hmm. The Magambia AP that you mentioned, it may not appeal to us so much, but to Black gamers who have been dying to see themselves represented in an AP, that's huge, right?
Yeah, I agree.
But also to go back to the kind of the safety of the various APs, I'll tell you, when I was in the meeting and I pitched, hey, what if everybody was part of a circus? That was not an easy sell.
I can see that. I can see that Extinction Curse was a hard sell.
Yeah, that was a hard sell for me as a player, and I'm playing in it. It was like, hey, you want to play this AP? Sure. Which one? We're going to run Extinction Curse. You got to be circus folk. Say again?
Yeah. But to get to Fly for Your Die. I do want to make it relevant. I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I'm a little outspoken for this in the offices back when we actually went to the offices, which we haven't done since March. But I believe that our stories can be more than just killing monsters and taking their stuff, right? That you can make these stories about something and they can try to say something. My dad was a union guy. He worked at a fabrication shop my whole life. He was a sheet metal mechanic, right? I wasn't the first member of my family to go to college. My mom went to a 2-year accounting school, right? She was a secretary. Mm-hmm. But we're pretty working class, you know, and those jobs aren't around anymore. Like, or they're pretty damn hard to find. And in many ways, our economic system is kind of dysfunctional, right? Like, it doesn't work the way it should work. Well, but we made that system. And if we made it, then we can make it different, right? Mm-hmm. I listened to a lot of Bruce Springsteen right in this AP, right? Like, my Spotify playlist for Fly Free or Die has got a lot of like Hammer songs. I've got sharecropping, cotton picking songs on that thing. I've got a lot of songs about working. I've got Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 on there. I've got, you know, anything that's about work. And I wanted to try and lift that up, you know, because I really feel like putting in an honest day's work for an honest day's pay is a noble concept. And so that's kind of the backbone of this. Now, the people that do it, you know, they don't think of themselves as noble. And they often get put into really difficult moral and ethical situations. And there's a lot of that in this AP. Mm-hmm. So you meet a lot of people. And when you meet these people, you have a huge opportunity to affect these people's lives for the better or for the worse. How do you treat them? Do you go out of your way to be selfless and help them even when it's of no benefit to you? Or are they only there for credits? Are they a credit dispensing machine? And you're just here to do whatever you need to do to get that 20 credits out of them, right? Right. And those decisions that you make affect those characters, not just in the AP, but throughout that in the one volume, but in the entire AP. Those characters come back volumes later, and how you when you are down and out on Absalom Station, and you've got nothing but the reputation you've built along the way. And then those people either come back and help you or they come back and laugh because, hey, man, you deserve it, right? So there's a lot of moral and ethical stuff built into this AP, not telling the players what to do, but trying to illustrate that the things that you do have consequences.
Mm-hmm. So for a GM who's looking to get their players excited about it, or even for a player who's like, well, maybe we want to play this in my home game. Sure. What sort of things can you tell us about We're No Heroes, the first chapter? What are they going to be jumping into?
Well, first off, start with some inspirations. Like if you like Alien, right, or Aliens, if you like Firefly Serenity, if you like, if if your favorite Star Wars game was Edge of Empire, right? Like the Han Solo, Chewie, Lando stuff, right? If you like Traveler from the old school days, if you like playing EVE Online and you're here to like, you know, merchant it up, then this is a great AP for all of that. But you start off, We're No Heroes is basically where you're working for the company, you're working for Edge Corp. They're terrible. Like they are, I've tried to make this company as lawful evil as I could possibly.
Oh my God.
and so you rapidly, so you're taking jobs and you go, this whole AP is kind of a, this is Tuesday, so we must be in the vast kind of adventure, right? Where you go to all these different planets all over the time. We spend almost all of the second volume is in the Vescarium, for example. Mm-hmm. And you're going to the vast or you're skipping through various patch worlds or whatever. Like you travel a lot. We get a lot of mileage out of the Starship Operations Manual in this.
Oh, good.
Nice.
And there's a whole section in the first book with all of the economics of operating a starship. How to buy and sell cargo, how to find cargo, and how much it costs to buy all that buy low, sell high stuff. And how you can, your starship doesn't automatically get better as you level up the way it does in a regular Starfinder AP. You only get build points for your starship when you sell cargo. And you have to sell and you have to buy that cargo with build points. Mm. So there's an economic game to this too, right? Because like Firefly, the characters on Serenity, you're just trying to, you know, keep your starship flying long enough to get to the next job. So if you get a few extra BP, well then, hey, it's time to build that laser turret that we've been wanting to add, or it's time to improve our drift engine a little bit so we can get to the destination faster, mm-hmm. right? And keep our perishable cargo from going bad while we're in the drift. So anyway, you start off working for the company, things go bad pretty fast, and you attract the attention of this crime boss, Lord St. John, who's this drow crime boss, works for the Golden League. And he, you know, he's got some stuff behind the scenes I don't want to spoil. But eventually he makes a pitch to you and he offers you a job. You are uniquely positioned, for reasons I won't go into, to steal this starship from the company. It's called the Oliphant. It's named after the Oliphant of John DeLay from Pat. And the Oliphant has some new experimental technology in it. It's got null space cargo holds, right? So it can hold its cargo holds are bigger on the inside than they are on the outside.
Exactly.
Well, this has the potential to dramatically transform interstellar trade. Imagine if every starship can hold twice as much as it already carries, right?
Oh, and
especially if only one group has that secret, right? Mm. Anyway, so he asked you to steal it. Well, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal, right? So that stealing that starship and the consequences of stealing it kicks off the AP. And then it's you on your stolen starship running from the crime boss and your old bosses at the company. There's a big debate over whether or not I should say this part, but I'm going to say it because this is how Uh-oh. I think.
All right, if you don't want spoilers, mute your speakers, come back in 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay.
The path of this adventure path, other adventure paths are rags to riches, right? Like you start off at level 1 and you're level 13 and you're fabulous. You're richer than Avadar, right? You're like fantastically rich. This AP is not like that. This AP is rags to riches to ruin to revenge. So you start off poor, you get everything, then you lose it all and you've got nothing. And then you get revenge on the sons of that took you down. Right?
I like it. Okay.
That's awesome.
So that's the arc. And some GMs may say, well, we don't want our players to know that. But I actually think it's better if they know that. Mm-hmm. If they know that that's the arc. Because there's a little bit of player buy-in to all of that, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. That actually kind of relates to a question from chat. Big Norse Wolf asks, how does the cargo system, buying and selling for BP, interact with the expected loot for the system? Kind of hard to be higher level adventure without walking around with the GDP of a moon colony and weapons.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. It's a big concern. And we address this very directly. We talk about all this stuff and we answer your questions. question specifically in the back matter. So if I'm not clear when I explain it, like, you know, I there's resources for you to go to. But we had to separate the credit economy from BP, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can't use credits to upgrade your Starship. Because if those two things interact, then player characters get tempted to make all kinds of really bad decisions for the game. Mm-hmm. They sell their laser turret off of their Starship right. in order to buy power armor for everyone. Mm-hmm. So now they're overpowered in all of the combat encounters, but they're underpowered in the Starship encounters, right? Right. Or they do the opposite. They mortgage all of their personal possessions so that they can upgrade their drift engine. Well, now they just get killed by everybody that they have to face in hand-to-hand combat, mm-hmm. but their Starship is too tough, right? So mm-hmm. in order to, Starfinder's got some balance, very specific balancing requirements. And to maintain that, we had to separate the build points from credits. Now, what we describe build points, and there's some of this is hinted at in the core rulebook, but it doesn't really get specific. You know what? Mm-hmm. Core rulebook sort of gives some guidelines on what build points can be. Like, you can think of them as various things. Salvage you got off of another ship, or somebody owes you a favor, so they put a new laser turret on your ship or whatever. But we wanted to quantify it. So think of build points as your capital. They're like your, maybe it's the loan you took out on the Starship, right? Or maybe it's the investment money that you've been able to get, or seed money from other people who have invested in you. Or maybe it is salvage. We've got some rules for that. So when you finish a Starship battle and you can salvage the wreck for a couple of build points, right? Which you can then save up and use. And the question was, how does that relate to loot? Well, you get paid build points when you complete a job because you've just brought your cargo full of Def Rexes or whatever. And I'm not making that up. That's volume two. You bring your cargo of Def Rexes to someplace and they pay you for those Def Rexes and they pay you in build points. Right. Okay. And then you can use those build points to upgrade your ship and to buy your next cargo and do all kinds of other things. You can take out insurance on your Starship. So if it gets blown up, you get a payout. You can insure your cargo. So if you lose your cargo, you still get paid. You can hire people to like find you jobs. I'm going to hire a guy who lives in Absalom Station and his sole duty is to find me work, right? Or you can even buy another Starship, mm-hmm. hire a crew to fly it mm-hmm. and just collect build points from them.
That's cool. Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
That is very neat. That's very cool.
You can have your own little space business.
It's like the business AP, but also the anti-capitalist AP and a pirate AP. Wow, this adventure is doing a lot, isn't it?
There are pirates. The pirates are a minor bit. I think when you first suggested that you were skeptical of it because it was Skull and Shackles, is you were afraid that the characters would be evil. Can I talk about that?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Please do.
This is not designed for evil characters. It's designed for characters who, well, they probably are neutral. It's probably their initial alignment. But there's a lot of questions about, are you going to do what's right or are you going to do what's easy? And what's right is almost always what's hard, right? Like, that's in my experience. Doing what's right almost always means doing what is hard. Mm-hmm. And doing the quick and the easy and the efficient or economical thing is often what leads to the dark side, right?
Definitely.
If I think of a character like Mal, the captain of, like Malcolm Reynolds, right? The captain of Serenity. Mm-hmm. Malcolm pretends to be neutral. He says he's here to do the job and get paid. But when the screw gets tight, Malcolm's compass points true north. He knows what's right. That's why when they do the train job, if you remember, and they steal all that medicine and he ends up giving it away, right? And this gets him in big trouble with another crime boss, right? Mm-hmm. So characters that are good have a very important role to play in this adventure because they are the moral compass that tells the neutral characters what's right. Now, will that good character prevail over the neutral ones who just want to get paid? That's for your table to decide.
Well, if James and I play it with our friends, I'm going to get overpowered.
So I actually ran Skulls and Shackles for an obscenely long amount of time. And while there's good parts of that adventure path,
yeah,
there is a lot of why not do the easy thing. Not necessarily because you're evil, but because the progression of the story doesn't push you to. It makes you hit a high very early.
Yeah.
And it seems like this has some things to make that not as much of a problem.
You'll tell me. You know, it's interesting that you've run the AP, so you know Skull and Shackles very well. I'd be very interested in your thoughts when you start to see the AP come out, Five-Year Die. I think that it's fair to make the neutral or evil choice the thing that's easy. Like, you can just waste this guy, take his money, and pay your bills, right? That's the wrong thing to do, but you could do it. But then the trick of writing it well is to make that decision have long-term ramifications, where now because you pasted that guy, well, now everybody treats you like the person who pastes people. So now people start getting their distance from you, and you start to be more isolated, and they treat you more poorly because they're treating you the way that you treat others. Mm-hmm. And that can be very unfun, right? Yeah. So maybe for our own sakes, we should treat people better. Maybe we should start to build a more positive reputation here because everybody likes that. We'll see. We'll see if it plays out.
Yeah,
gosh,
it was that type of thing that wasn't enforced in Skulls and Shackles. It was like, hey, just be as big of a pirate as you can, and that reputation will carry you. And it's like, strive for more. Don't wait for the book to have to push you into peril.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you're being called a pirate, right? Like, it is the pirate AP. And so people are thinking they're sort of indulging. They're leaning into the pirate.
Right.
But this is like the working person AP, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we have sympathy for the underdogs, and we want to do what the underdog does. This is kind of an underdog AP. Now, it changes because you can't just go from planet to planet trying to get jobs for six volumes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've got 360 pages to fill. And also, Starfinder characters get pretty wealthy once they hit a certain level, like our question mm-hmm. or comment. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really preserve the feel of struggling blue collar people when you've got a 10,000 credit laser pistol on your hip, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to take the AP in some different directions, but we try to lean into that working class stuff as long as we can early on to really establish the feel. And then the plot kind of grabs a hold of you and takes off, right?
Nice. Very cool. Man, I really hope we get to run this one, James. We have a couple friends that I just want you to turn to and say, maybe you shouldn't have pasted that guy. And no, because James has a voice when he's hitting people with the morality cudgel. It's so good.
When you say your actions have consequences, we played through Curse of the Crimson Throne, and I just remember at the end of that adventure path going, wow, where did all the good and helpful people go? We're only left with, like, these evil people to deal. Which of you is least evil? We need you to help with some stuff.
I'm actually in the very final stages of developing still the very last volume of this AP, and I am literally on the last 8 pages of this AP.
Wow.
Oh, fantastic.
And while I'm writing it, there are characters from volume 2 showing up, and it's okay if the players treated this person well, he helps them, and if they treated them poorly, he stabs them in the back. Like, this is when I pitched this idea to Rob, he described it as bold, I think, by which he meant hard. this sounds really hard to do. Ambitious, that was the word. He described it as ambitious.
One of the questions I have then is there going to be like a tracking sheet, perhaps as a web download for GMs to keep track of all these NPCs that they have to keep track of the attitudes? Did they do A or B? Did they treat them well? Will there be something like that to aid GMs in their...
That's a very good idea. We don't have anything like that right now. This might be something that we make an appeal to our crowd source, right? Like, let's reach out to fans. Because I would love to see something like that. Like, something that, like, some kind of dial that you can sort of measure, like, how good or how evil. Like, how did the player characters treat them, you know? Or even just a list of a bunch of names with some lines next to them, with a way to put in some comment here.
Because it can help GMs, I think, sometimes go, is this a throwaway NPC that really there's no long-term consequences? Are the consequences later in this book? Or are the consequences 3 books from now and I'm going to have to remember that?
I
think now that you've asked for the crowdsource, I'm positive that it's going to happen now. Like you said,
and I want to help. If someone wants to do that, I want to help. So reach out to me, and we'll find a way that I can get you the information and resources that you need to help you make that. I would love to
see that. Fantastic. Yeah. And what is the best way to contact you?
I'm on Twitter at Dr. Comics. All spelled out. I'm also, of course, on Paizo. Mm-hmm. So you can email me at jason.tondro@paizo.com. That's my official Paizo address.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we got on the pre-show about a scenario that you wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you had a good story about it. The scenario is, you remember the name. I forgot the name again.
Crashdown. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Crashdown was 3-1. It's the first scenario in the third season. And I remember when Thirsty, I wrote to Thirsty and I said, I really love to do another scenario because at the time I was kind of in between jobs, you know, and for a while at Paizo, like, I don't want to over glamorize the RPG industry. It's super fun to be in, but for a while, if I didn't get freelance work, I didn't pay rent. It's a tight business. So
that is
so like, okay. I'd love to do another scenario for you. And Thirsty apparently has decided I'm like the wilderness survival guy. So I think it's because I did the one of the one what lurks beneath or what lies beneath. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Season, there's like this sort of Star Trek moral dilemma scenario, right? Where you like,
oh, I love that one.
I don't want to spoil it, but anyway, I was traveling that at that time, and so I went to the University of Miami and Ohio to do to lecture and to talk to their game design program. Well, I got a bunch of the game designing students there, and we just broke that scenario open. So we rented out a room for about 4 hours. I had six students from the University of Miami and Ohio program and we just outlined that whole damn scenario. We figured out what all the encounters were. We figured out what all the monsters were going to be and all the threats and like that whole like crashing sequence with like all the skill challenges and stuff. Like the students figured all that out, man. I just took dictation. And it was a really great experience. Like, I learned a lot. They had a lot of great original ideas. It was really fun to collaborate on it. Mm-hmm. We broke down every part of that thing. And so then I had this big, long, super extended outline. And then I took it home and I wrote it all up, you know. And they named like the planet and they named all the aliens and stuff. So it was a really great experience. Yeah. And I'm glad that you like it because it was fun to write.
Oh, it was so much fun. I played my Dragonkin Technomancer for the first time. So like while that was going on, like I started being like this all like, oh, I know all this magic. I'm so great with tech. And then by like week three, I was like, I've rejoined my ancestors. I've been stuck on this planet without Wi-Fi for 3 weeks. I loved that scenario.
Interesting because, Thirsty gave me some of the stuff. He's like, okay, we want them to be stranded on this planet for a long time, like a month or whatever, a few weeks. And we don't really know what the players are going to do. Like, it's really kind of open-ended, you know, as open-ended as a scenario, Starfinder Society scenario can be.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of threw in a bunch of survival gear and I made the rules for the storms, you know, and then I just kind of crossed my fingers and hoped for the best. And I didn't know if it would be too deadly and it would kill everybody or it would be not deadly enough and everybody would just kind of like walk through it. But it sounds like it's hit a sweet spot, which is just testament to Thirsty.
I think that for me, James, did you play this one with me or were you the GM? I don't remember.
No, I played it. I actually think I played it with a different group.
All right. So when I played this one, for us, I don't think any of us really got too like destroyed by any of the environmental stuff, but like, your spacesuit and the fact that you have limited environmental protections automatically creates a feeling of suspense when you know you're going to be stuck for a while. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, you noticed that we had to do this at very low level.
Yeah.
Like because environmental protections rapidly get pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So we had to do this at low level when everybody's first level. So their armor gives them 1 day of protection. And then we put in some batteries so you can maybe recharge. And we had some rules for like, okay, well, what if you run out of charges? What can you do then? So, yeah,
Yeah, it was good because like for us, like a lot of us, we were like, oh, there's a storm in. How many hours is this going to work? So we were sitting there like rationing the battery power of our spacesuits. Mm-hmm. And so like
that's my ears, man. That's exactly.
Yeah. So like I wouldn't say that it killed us because we rationed well, but like the tension of being like, oh, my gosh, am I going to have enough battery left in my spacesuit to survive?
Well, that's the perfect. So that's exactly what we want, because we don't want to kill it. Like the goal is not to kill the player. Mm-hmm. The goal is for everybody to be tense but have fun.
Yeah, you did it. For us, we were tense and had fun.
I'm glad.
Well, and a friend of mine, when I was getting into role playing games, said, you know, when I was learning to GM, a GM's job is to try as hard as you can to kill the player characters and fail. And I think I think the job of the scenario writer, the adventure writer, is to set up circumstances that allow the GM to do that, but to also pull back at the right moments, or, you know, just in case they have a series of bad rolls or something, like give them the tools they need to sort of finesse that line that they have to walk between TPK and complete victory. And that way they know that at any moment this could go any way, but ultimately, hopefully, you know, the players will succeed.
Yeah, the ultimately these adventures that we write, whether they're scenarios for OP or whether they're AP or something else, they're dead until they hit your gaming table, right? When they hit your gaming table is when the GM can really bring them to life, especially with an AP or something like a module where you're not in an organized play scenario. So you maybe have a little bit more control over the adventure and you can just tear it up. You know, you can just change characters and you can move plots around and you can tear whole things out and put a whole new original stuff of your own in. And that's, I really look forward to seeing people do that with this adventure path. I am not going to get upset if you screw with my adventure. On the contrary, I want you to screw with the adventure because I'm a GM and I screw with every adventure I run. Like I have never run an adventure straight out of the book, right? Never. So I don't expect anybody else out there too. And all I can do is give you as many tools as I can and give you a good story that you can throw out the window if you want to, right? That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah, especially with the ability to do lateral stuff. Like, some people crave it. Like, I ran Dead Sons, and, and Alex is in this group. They kidnapped somebody and just ended up adding them to their party. This is a better deal. And it's like, how do I accommodate for this now? We figured it out. But it's like, people are just going to want abilities to do that. And there was limited abilities for them to take on people. And they were just so starved for other humans. Or, other compatriots.
No, listen, they were our friend. We were like, please, we don't want to have to kill you. Just come with us.
There's a fair number of NPCs that ask to accompany the player characters at various points of Fly Free or Die. Like there's a trio of goblins that in the second volume, and they just want to get off Absalom Station, right? Like they're like, we got to get out of here, man. And if you will help them, they're like, can we go with you? We don't even care where you go. We just want to get out of here. And you can choose to take them or not and maybe find them a new home on some planet. But maybe you carry them around with you for a while, as long as you can tolerate three goblins in your engineering room, right? and a lot of the APs had that. The authors, there's a lot of wonderful authors for this AP. And they really had a lot of leeway to create these sort of colorful supporting cast characters that because Starfinder's got so many crazy player character races, right? So you've got space goblins and camel people and walruses and otter.
Oh, no.
Sentient squids.
They're all over. So players, so the authors really just kind of had a lot of fun with that and created a lot of these supporting characters. And I would not be at all surprised if some of them ended up hitching a ride on your starship, just like you described. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite supporting character?
Gosh, that's a tough call.
Choose your child. Who's your favorite?
This is really hard. Well, the players have kind of this contact who helps them from the very beginning of the AP. Her name is Tarika. She's a Bernari. She's the otter folk, right? And she starts off as their dispatcher. She's like the person, they all work for the company. And she's the person who gives them jobs, assigns them jobs from the company. She's like, okay, go to this planet, pick up these crates of juju berries or whatever and take them to Akaton where they'll sell for a delicacy, right? But when the players quit or get fired, depending on how you look at it, she also quits/gets fired. And she kind of becomes the player's fixer. She's helping them find jobs. She gets them jobs. But that's not the character I want to talk about. I want to talk about her daughter, Shan. Tarika's got a daughter, Shan, and Shan works on this construction work in like this terraforming project on a planet in the vast. And it's volume three. And volume three is like my Abyss tribute, if you know that movie. James Cameron's The Abyss. Mm-hmm. This whole AP is basically a giant James Cameron movie, right? And I described it that way in the introduction to the authors. There's like this whole thing for me about what this AP is kind of about and what the themes are and what I want you to hit. And I'm like, just imagine basically any James Cameron movie, whether it's Terminator or Aliens or The Abyss or even Titanic. Like, he's constantly talking about how rich people are like another alien species. Like, they have more in common with each other than we do with rich people, right? And they don't even understand. We don't even understand what they're thinking. So this is very much in the spirit of the AP. Well, the third volume is set on this water planet. Mm-hmm. And there's the big terraforming project going on there. And the players, they have a reason to go there. And I don't want to, you know, get too far into it. But Tarika's daughter, Shan, is a construction worker at this underwater aquatic terraforming project. Mm-hmm. And I just love her. I like this idea, this sort of Brenneri construction worker, you know, with like a wrench and overalls and just like doing the job 10,000 leagues under the sea. And I dig that all day.
So little tape measure under the armpit is the little rock.
So
exactly. Yeah.
If she's wearing overalls, then does like, you know, like the little kid overalls have like the butt flap for the, yeah. does she just like have, there's a hole there for her tail 24/7?
I think she does have a hole for her tail. She only has a profile shot or a head and shoulders picture. Right. Mm-hmm. But she's probably going to need a pawn by the time the pawn collection comes out. So I'm going to have to get a pawn card for her.
Oh, that's fun.
So she probably will have a little tail sticking out of her overalls. Yeah.
Well, it's that Otter Space meme.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so good. With the pipes.
It's so good. Excellent stuff. So we talked a lot about Fly Free or Die, yeah. But I would hope this isn't your last adventure path for Paizo. What does the future hold for you, Jake?
Well, I can tell you what the future holds for Paizo and then also for me. So today, kind of stealth announced, the product page for our first volume of the next AP showed up on the Paizo website today. And that is Horizons of the Vast. Yeah, very exciting. Very cool. I think the name of the first volume is Planetfall. And this is our Kingmaker in Space AP. Now, people have been asking for this for a long time. And we in the creative staff had been working on it for a long time. But we had to do it right because there's a lot of problems with a Kingmaker in Space, right? Like, okay, in Kingmaker, you have this sort of, okay, you go to this wilderness and there's a bunch of orcs and goblins and people and you just kill all of them and take over. Well, we don't want to do that. That's kind of like, I don't want the player characters to be Christopher Columbus, right? Like, this is not a good idea. And we were very sensitive to the idea of the colonial nature of any kind of
colonization.
Yeah. And now part of this is rooted in the word itself. Like, when you think of colony in a science fiction setting, it doesn't always mean that. It can be like, I built a moon colony. There's nobody on the moon. I just built a colony there and now I'm settling it, right? So there's no indigenous population that that lives there. You're not taking over anybody's space.
Yeah. But you're not displacing any sentient creature.
Precisely, exactly. Apient. So we on the Star Chamber, which is what we all call ourselves, the Star Chamber has pitched a bunch of different ideas about how to do Kingmaker in Space. And I, in fact, myself pitched one when I pitched Fly Free or Die. I had about three or four pitches that I went into that meeting with. And one of them was my version of Kingmaker in Space. But Joe Pacini had one and Keeley had one and Rob had thoughts on how he would do it. And John Compton had thoughts. And we all kind of knocked this thing around for a while. Well, Keeley finally cracked it. He took everybody's ideas and he figured out a way to do it. And our first step was ensuring that there are no sapient species on any of these planets. Mm-hmm. There are animals, right? There are dangerous life forms, but there are no native sentient species. Now, there are people that have also come from outside, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got like a patron, and maybe it's Avatar Corp, or maybe it's the Starfinder Society, or maybe it's the Stewards, and you actually get to pick who your patron is. You've got some big patron back in the Pact Worlds that is sending you to this planet. Well, mm-hmm. all those other groups have also sent people to this planet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like multiple settlements on this planet all at the same time. And all those other settlements become rivals for you. And it becomes a way for us to have thinking people that you interact with that aren't indigenous cultures, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. In addition, there are other older cultures that have been here long before you, but they've all been extinct. They've all left or been destroyed by some mysterious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's lots of
ancient
alien
precursors, ruins, whatever you want to call
that,
them.
Yeah. I like. Cool.
And the alien ruins on various planets. And I actually get to write one of these. I'm writing the third one.
Very awesome.
But I'll be developing the back matter for all of these while Keeley develops the adventure path, the main adventures, right? So we're coming up. So I'm doing like the player's guide, and we'll have a full like settlement system. We call it the charter system, mm-hmm. that you can use to like build projects in your settlement, right? So we're going to build new nuclear reactors, or we're going to build a security system, or we're going to build a satellite launch system, and what does all that do? And so you'll have this hex, there'll be a lot of hex crawling involved, and you'll build your settlement, your charter, what we call it. You'll build your charter on the map, and you'll bump up against your rival charters, and maybe you'll come into conflict with them, or maybe you'll have diplomacy with them. There's a lot of that kind of kingdom building going on. And we had to adapt the official kingmaker king building rules. Mm-hmm. Which involved trimming a lot because they're mm-hmm. 50 pages, you know, and
yeah.
had to do like a much smaller version of that would fit in our AP. Mm-hmm. And then also we've got a lot of wonderful authors filling out all the other planets in the same system. So for example, the system is Waydana, named after Waydan, right? The god of travel. So mm-hmm. Waydana's got like 6 planets in it, and you land on, I think, Waydana 4. But I've got 6 volumes in the AP. So in every volume, we're going to get a codex of worlds about one of the planets in the Waydana system. And then we're going to get a bunch of alien creatures that live on that planet. So we're sort of building an ecology for each of the 6 planets as we go. And the idea is we're just going to create a bunch of plot hooks and stories for you. So, well, if you could explore the Waydana system for a whole other campaign, like you could do a whole game just set on all those planets without even touching the core adventure spine of the AP, which I can't even really spoil, right? I don't even want to spoil it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of sort of a kingdom building idea. With all the rivals and problems and eventually, I mean, there's other powers out there, right? There's the Vescarium and the Pact Worlds and the Aslanti Empire and who knows all what else. And if you start to bring everybody together and you start to get kind of powerful, well, then maybe you're going to have to deal with some of them at some point, positively or negatively. Right.
How excited would you be if someday down the line Owlcat Games turned the Horizons of the Vast into a big game like Kingmaker?
Well, so I would be lying if I had not said I've been thinking about exactly that, right? Mm. Like that's why I want, because one of the things you notice about the Kingmaker video game is that it has an insatiable need for more content. They had to just invent all kinds of more stuff just to fill hours that you right. didn't need to fill when you were just playing through the AP. Mm-hmm. Well, so that's why I'm building out these ecologies on all of the Waydana 6 planets, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all of, so if they ever do, and if Falcon ever does the Horizons of the Vast game, they've got to put on all of those planets. Mm-hmm. So I would love for that to happen. That'd be phenomenal.
Very cool. Any last thoughts or products, upcoming things that you want to plug before we say goodnight for the evening?
Well, we finished our playtest lately. We've already done we've done one class playtest mm-hmm. already. We've got mm-hmm. another playtest class coming up. The have we announced this yet already? Am I spoiling anything?
I think you might be spoiling something because the only thing
I almost did.
I'm gonna keep my mouth shut then.
Totally. But okay.
We did mechs and we did the nano. The nanosite, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, let's just say that there's more stuff coming.
Oh,
that's exciting.
Yeah. And we want the game to keep getting bigger, and we've got a lot of sci-fi tropes that we haven't hit yet. Mm-hmm. We've got books coming that haven't been announced. And so I can't announce them, but I wish I really could because they're awesome. And we have other projects that aren't just hardbacks or adventure paths coming out. You might be seeing adventures in a new format or two.
You're so teasy.
Oh gosh.
Wait. Are you just saying this so that we'll have you back on to talk about these new things once you're allowed to?
When they come out, you will have me back. Yes.
Excellent.
When they come out, you will want me back. I will be there.
That's a Godfather move right there.
That is smart. I don't think we've ever had a guest who took efforts to seed their triumphant return. Good job, Jake.
I'm happy to help. I do learn. I can be taught.
That is great. No, I mean, you are pioneering. You're not you are not being taught. You are teaching. All right. So in other Starfinder news, it's worth mentioning that the Starfinder core rulebook just had an errata that came out recently with lots of interesting changes, like changes to grenade costs and medicinal prices.
All of that stuff got rolled into the pocket edition.
Yeah, I bought it because of that.
If you get the pocket edition, it's got all that errata. That grenade and consumable price change, we have been fighting over for years. Like, we have won. To get that put into the books. This is why they did that whole big potion plot line in the organized play, right? Mm-hmm. With the hatch and everything. Mm-hmm. As basically an in-world explanation for why the price of medicinals suddenly plummets.
Mm-hmm. Go Starfinders! Bringing affordable medicine to the galaxy!
Fantastic.
It's even a plot point in Fly Free or Die at one point. I think that one of the characters, like a relative of hers, can't afford their life-giving medical treatment, right? Like they can't afford their health insurance. And they get the player characters to hack the company computers, not to steal money, but to get her uncle health insurance, right? Like, nice. That's the kind of stuff you do.
I love it. Good roll around in connection with that.
Yeah.
So do you have, I mean, you already told us where we could find you online if we want to chat with you more, because of course everybody's going to want to hit you up on Twitter to chat.
Good, because please do. Yeah. And also I do a Star Trek podcast every week called Space Force, where we analyze the latest episode of Star Trek. So I've been doing that with, we're on our third season now. We did all the Star Trek films and the first season of Picard, and now we're on Discovery. And I'm writing on some stuff that I can't really reveal yet, but I'm writing on Horizons of the Vast Adventure, and I might have some more Pathfinder stuff coming up. It's a good time to, I've really enjoyed kind of coming into a writing career here at Paizo. I've been able to write a lot of adventures and contribute to a lot of books. And I'll tell you what I miss though. I miss the office. I miss being in the room with some of the greatest creative minds in the industry. I work with some of the most brilliant, inspirational people, and I miss a lot of them. The whole Starfinder team is brilliant, but I also miss the ones that have left. And I'm talking to Owen, who I think might be watching, and maybe Chris Sims. I miss the hell out of these people. Amanda, who was a great boss and very important to the Starfinder team, and other people that have left. Liz Liddell, we just lost not that long ago. She's gone to Wizards of the Coast to be a managing editor, I think. And Wizards keeps headhunting all of our best people. But anyway, I'm really lucky to work at a really great company. I work with wonderful people. And thank you so much for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, we were super grateful that you were able to come. I know that you have a very important home game coming up soon, so we're not going to hold you for too much longer.
I'm running Ars Magica, and my players are going into the infernal town in Malta. Like, they're going to 13th century Malta, and the whole village is infested with demons. Like, I don't tell the players that, but like, it's just like one demon after another.
I hope none of them are watching this.
I'm kidding. They actually know this is coming. But anyway, I have to give them a content warning. You're going into a demonic village. Content warning. Like, this is not good. This is a horror movie. You're all walking into a horror movie, so be ready. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my night tonight.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on with us. And if you would like, if you, the audience out there, would like to continue the conversation about Live Free or Die or the upcoming Starfinder in Space adventure path, you can always go to our Discord. The No Direction Discord is one of the friendliest and happiest Discords in the Paizoverse. And we highly encourage it. Or you can catch some of our live content and interact with our guests here on Twitch every Wednesday evening. So. Is there anything else that you'd like to do? One last shout out.
Keep playing the game. We can't do
keep
it without
playing you. The game.
The game is dead without you guys.
I will never let Starfinder die. It's too good.
Thanks, <Tom. laughs>
Thanks for joining us. And until next time, go beyond with No Direction.